If you want to open your Bible to Mark chapter 8, Gospel of Mark chapter 8 is where we're going to focus our thoughts for this next little bit here. Mark chapter 8. So earlier this morning we studied a unique miracle. It was unique in the sense that it's the only miracle of Jesus during his ministry that's recorded in all four Gospels. For our second study this morning, we are going to look at another unique miracle. This one is unique in the fact that it is the only miracle, it seems, Jesus performed during his ministry that he performed in two phases. And what I mean by that is he did it the first time, and it was not the results that people expected, and so then he did it the second time. And that is the healing of the blind man at Bethsaida. I also want to talk about that this morning because it's just a couple chapters further along in the book of Mark. And there's a reason for that. It's because healing of this blind man, Jesus ties closely to the healing of the feeding of the 5,000 that we talked about this morning. And so I'd like to think about what this miracle is, what it means, how it kind of fits with the book of Mark, and what we can learn about it ourselves. It's a little different than what we talked about earlier, because while the feeding of the 5,000 is a miracle that provides us great encouragement, in many ways, the healing of the blind man is a miracle that's an occasion of serious warning. And it's worth thinking about this morning, whether we are heeding those warnings ourselves. So Mark chapter 8, we'll read first of all the account of this miracle, and then we talk a little bit further about the context. So starting in verse 22. "And they came to Bethsaida, and some people brought him to a blind man and begged him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. And when he had spit on his eyes and laid his hands on him, he asked him, 'Do you see anything?' And he looked up and said, 'I see men, but they look like trees walking.' Then Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again, and he opened his eyes, and his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. And he sent him to his home, saying, 'Do not even enter the village.'" So that is it in Mark, and that's it in the Gospels. This is the only account we have of this particular healing. And it's kind of an interesting healing, because not so much that it's a blind man. Jesus heals other blind individuals. We'll see just a couple of chapters down in Mark. There's Bartimaeus, which he heals, who's blind. But this one is interesting because there's almost two parts to this miracle. Jesus takes the man. He does some things, apparently to heal him, and says, "Do you see anything?" And the man says, "Well, I see people, but they look kind of like trees walking around." And then Jesus does the miracle a second time, and the man can see clearly. Which, if we're honest with ourselves, is kind of strange, right? It's strange because of what the man says. It's strange that Jesus does things twice. I think what the man says when he says that people look like trees, really what it means that he can't see things very well. Jesus later on, when he heals him the second time, the man can see things clearly. So I get the impression when I'm reading that maybe this person had seen before and lost his sight, maybe had never seen, but he had heard about what trees were like. But whatever it was, now that he can sort of see, he sees people, but they kind of look like trees. He can't see much else except kind of this form, like this rough figure out there moving around. He can't see any detail. And so he says, "Well, I see figures moving around, but it's like kind of big trees moving. I don't think this is what I'm supposed to see." And then Jesus heals him a second time. To some, maybe critics would look at this and say, "Well, this shows that Jesus really didn't have the power that he would say he did, or there was some ways that Jesus's power were limited." I don't think that at all, simply because you don't see this anywhere else in the Gospels. And like we said, we'll talk about later this morning, another blind man Jesus healed immediately. So rather than this being some sort of limitation on Jesus's part, I see this more as a purposeful act, which is a broader lesson, not really to the blind man perhaps, though we don't know much about him, but a broader lesson to the disciples that were with Jesus at the time. And I think that lesson will become clear as we read more of the context surrounding this particular miracle in Mark. So how did Jesus get here and what's going on? Well, we talked this morning about the feeding of the 5,000. Shortly after that, there was the feeding of the 4,000 in Mark chapter 8. And after the feeding of the 4,000, we'll pick up in verse 11 of Mark chapter 8, Jesus's nemesis again, the Pharisees, show up. And in verse 11, read, "The Pharisees came and began to argue with Jesus, seeking from him a sign from heaven to test him." I guess we can kind of stop there. It's interesting because this is not the first 5 minutes of Jesus's ministry, right? It's not like he's right out the gate and he announced something. They say, okay, well, show us some kind of sign or explain to us why you're saying these things. Jesus has done various miracles to this point. Now, they all haven't been in the same location in front of the same people, but it's funny how he's fed the 5,000 and now he's fed the 4,000, and the Pharisees come up to him and begin to argue, saying, show us something, right? Show us some sign to show who you are. Verse 12, "And he sighed deeply in his spirit and said, why does this generation seek a sign? Truly I say to you, no sign will be given to this generation. And he left them, got into a boat again, and went to the other side." Now they had forgotten to bring bread, and they had only one loaf with them in the boat. And he cautioned them, saying, "Watch out, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod." And they began discussing with one another the fact that they had no bread. And Jesus, aware of this, said to them, "Why are you discussing the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? Do you not remember when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000? How many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up?" And they said to him, 12. "And the 7 for the 4,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up?" And they said to him, 7. And he said to them, "Do you not yet understand?" So Jesus has some interaction with the Pharisees. He says, "No, I'm not going to show you a sign. You guys are asking for signs. No sign is going to be given to you." In fact, I think it's Matthew's account of that. He says, "But the sign of Jonah," right? To talk about how there would be in the future, Jesus would die and raise from the dead. But no, he was not going to perform a sign for them then. They get in the boat, they leave, and as they're sailing away, Jesus looks at his followers and says, "Watch out. Okay, I'm going to caution you. Be careful about the leaven of those guys, the Pharisees, as well as the leaven of Herod." And the disciples, you got to love them because they were probably reacting just like all of us would have reacted. They start to look at each other and they say, "Leaven, leaven. Oh, we should watch out for the bread of the Pharisees. So maybe there's something wrong with the bread of the Pharisees, or we shouldn't go get bread from them. But why would he tell us not to get? Oh, it's because of the bread. We didn't bring any bread." And they look and say, "Did you bring bread? I didn't have any of the bread. Did you? I didn't bring it." Like, we carried 7 baskets. We carried 13 or 12 baskets. Why didn't you bring any bread? Well, it wouldn't fit in the boat, or I don't know. We gave it away. And then they start arguing amongst each other. Why don't we have any bread? And Jesus, understanding what's going on in the boat, he says to them, "Why are you guys talking about bread? Don't you get it?" That he's in Matthew, in fact, in Matthew 16, verse 12, it's very specific that the disciples come to the realization that, oh, Jesus isn't talking about bread from the Pharisees. He's talking about the teaching from the Pharisees. But he uses bread as an analogy, or leaven as an analogy, right? Because you put leaven in bread, and then the bread expands and grows. And maybe bread was on their mind because they had just had these 2 miraculous feedings. But he says to them, just like that, there is the dangerous thoughts and the dangerous teaching of these 2 groups of individuals, the Pharisees and then Herod. Be careful with their thoughts, be careful with their teaching, because if that gets into your life, it will expand just like the bread expands with leaven, and it will change the nature, just like the nature of the bread is changed by yeast, the nature of your life will be changed by the influence and the teaching of these groups. And he tells them, don't you understand, right? I've fed you. I've taken care of you. I have the power to give you bread. Are your hearts so hardened, right? Are your eyes so dim that you don't really know what's going on? And then, of course, then comes the blind man. So what is it about the Pharisees and Herod that Jesus would warn about? Well, first of all, who are these individuals? So the Pharisees, if you've read through the New Testament, familiar with them. They're very religious individuals. And in fact, to commend them, they were much more focused on religion than perhaps other groups and political parties of the Jews in the first century. They hated Rome, and they wanted a return to the Davidic kingdom. Do you remember at the time the Jews, if we could have a time machine and go back in time to first century Judea, I would be nervous to say this out loud because people would probably attack me or stone me. But the Jews didn't run their own country, right? They were pretty feisty about that. You remember arguing with Jesus? They said, "We're Jews. We've never been slaves to anybody. How are you?" And it's like, well, no, you've been slaves a lot throughout your history. And at the time, they were subservient to Rome. Rome ran the show, though Rome let them have some local governance as well. The Pharisees hated Rome. They hated that, and they wanted to return to the Davidic kingdom. They believed the words of God that there would be a ruler on the throne of David, and they wanted that ruler to come back and be put in his rightful place. But they did not appreciate, by and large, Jesus. Most of the Pharisees were not welcoming of Jesus, and that is because Jesus was a threat to them. He threatened them because he threatened their traditions, he exposed their hypocrisy, and he threatened their position as a religious elites. And so while the Pharisees were students of the law of Moses as well, they prided themselves on their role as students and their role of teachers. And when Jesus came along and threatened their traditions, their interpretations of the law, their status as the master teachers, they became furious, and eventually they thought the only solution was to kill Jesus rather than jeopardizing their position in society. Now, what about Herod? You think of Herod the king, right, being the ruler, or maybe Herod the line of Herods as the king. Again, Herod, he was sort of the king, but he sort of wasn't, right? Because he ran the show, but he ran it while he was on a tight leash of Rome, who truly ran the show. You can think more broadly here, besides just Herod, you could think of the Herodians. Herodians were a political party that was a rival to the Pharisees, and they hated Rome as well. They wanted a return of the kingdom, but they didn't want a return of the Davidic kingdom. They wanted a return of the Herodian kingdom to its rightful place. And so they thought, the problem's Rome. Let's get Rome out of here. The Herod family, they've been doing a fine job. Let's just give them the power that they deserve, and then Israel will be what it should be. They didn't always get along with the Pharisees. You could tell Pharisees a little bit maybe more religious than the Herodians, religious conservatives maybe than the Herodians. But the Herodians and the Jews agree, or Pharisees agreed on one thing, and that is to oppose Jesus. And they're mentioned a few times in the Gospels as teaming up with the Pharisees to challenge Jesus. And the reason they were not generally welcoming of Jesus is because Jesus threatened them by exposing Herod's sin and undermining the Herodians' preoccupation with politics and political power. So you remember Jesus talking about Herod, saying, calling him a fox, and John the Baptist exposing, you know, what's going on with the kind of the corrupt monarchy here. That would not endear Jesus to the Herodians, nor would his focus on meek and humble service, the true kingdom, right? Not the Herodian kingdom, which some people were focused on, but the true kingdom of God being separate from the political kingdom in front of them. That is not what the Herodians wanted to hear. So Jesus warns his followers after this kind of tussle with the Pharisees. He says, watch out for the teaching of these groups. Be careful of these religious conservatives who are focused on their position as religious elites. Be careful with these folks who are connected to Herod in society with their preoccupation on their political position. Be careful with these individuals. Watch out. And then he says, can you guys not see? Can you not see what the focus should be? And then he heals the blind man. A blind man who he healed, who couldn't really see after being healed, and who he healed a second time, who could then see more clearly. So what's the point of all of this? Well, I think the point is, first of all, we know from the feeding of the 5,000 in the context about that, that God will accomplish his work to his glory, and he will work through his people, and he will provide for his people. Jesus has demonstrated that. But his people, while we're doing the work of God, must avoid the destructive influence that comes from at least two areas. And maybe, of course, there's more things we should avoid, but Jesus highlights two dangerous areas here. First, the danger of religious elites and second, the danger of the politically powerful. And he illustrates this dramatically, or Mark, I should say, illustrates this dramatically in two ways. First, the twofold healing of the blind man, and second, the next three chapters of Mark, which we'll discuss in a moment. But first, the healing of the blind man. We have a man who was healed, but he still couldn't see clearly. The disciples, their eyes had been opened spiritually. They had been with Jesus. And to a certain extent, their eyes were open because they had dedicated their lives to following Jesus. But their vision was still obscured and potentially further obscured by these corrupting influences of the Pharisees and the Herodians. And to the extent that the apostles were already corrupted by those influences, Mark demonstrates in the following chapters, start 8:27, going all the way through 10:52. Now, for the sake of time this morning, we're not going to read that text, but we're going to kind of water ski across it, if you will, like kind of pretty fast, skim the surface, and talk about some of the big events going on. But it really is fascinating how the Gospel of Mark is structured, perhaps to point this out. Something that I've really grown to appreciate, I think, over time, is the order of things in the Gospels. And folks here probably understand this better than me. For longtime students of the Bible, the order in the Gospels means something. Sometimes it's chronological, sometimes it's not. Sometimes the writers put things in certain, two things right in a row to make a stark comparison. And perhaps Mark is doing this in this section because we start with the healing of one blind man, the blind man of Bethsaida, which healed him, wasn't all the way, healed him a second time. We then have several chapters talking about certain things with the disciples. Then we have the healing of a second blind man, that's Bartimaeus, and that blind man is healed instantaneously in just one thing from Jesus. And as soon as Bartimaeus is healed, Jesus marches right into Jerusalem with a triumphal entry. And then again, it's the last week of his life, and then we go from there to the crucifixion. So this section here is really in Mark, the last bit of Jesus's ministry before the final week, right, the triumphal entry and afterwards, and it's bookended by the healing of two blind men. The blind man that had to be healed twice because he couldn't really see, and then the second blind man who's healed immediately. And in between are all these interesting encounters with Jesus's disciples. So let's kind of hit the high points here as we skim along the surface. So in Mark chapter 8, there's the blind man who has to be healed twice. Peter then, in starting verse 27, he confesses, right, the good confession, Jesus is the Christ. Right after that, Jesus says, as the Christ, I'm going to die. And immediately Peter says, no, you're not going to die. And Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. You're not focused on the right things. Chapter 9, there's a transfiguration. Jesus brings his closest apostles with him, but they don't really know what's going on. And they're just like, what does this mean? What should we do? Should we build tents? And then afterwards they ask Jesus, why? Well, who's Elijah? How is this working? They don't really understand. They get back to the other disciples who had been trying to heal a boy possessed of the demon, and it didn't work. They had healed other people before, but they tried over and over again to heal this boy, and they weren't able to do it. The man says to Jesus, your followers can't do this. Jesus says, how long, faithless people, am I going to put up with you? And then he heals the demon-possessed boy. Then Jesus again says, I'm going to die and to be raised. Then the disciples begin to argue among themselves about who is the greatest in the group. Then the disciples go up to Jesus in the middle of chapter 9 and say, Jesus, there's a person over there who's healing people, but he's not part of our group. We need to tell him to stop. Jesus says, leave him alone. He's serving God. Next, Jesus says, you all need to focus on sin to the point of cutting off your hand or poking out your eye, because you need to make sure you get to heaven and cut away this stuff that's interfering with it. Next, there's kind of an argument about divorce where some religious leaders come up to Jesus, seemingly trying to justify themselves, saying, so really, when do people have to get divorced? What do you say about this? Jesus says, it is what it is. You're faithful to your spouse for life. That's what we're talking about, love and faithfulness. This is how it's been from the beginning, despite the hardness of heart of people in the Old Testament. Then children start to come to Jesus, and the disciples say, get the kids out of here. Jesus says, no, I want to see the children. Then the rich young man comes up to Jesus to talk to him. Jesus says, you need to sell your stuff. he's not willing to do it, he goes away. Jesus then says, I'm going to die for a third time. And then James and John come up to him and say, Jesus, can we be your right-hand men on your right and your left hand and all this that's about to happen? Jesus tells him, you guys don't know what you're talking about. And then at the end of Mark chapter 10, the next blind man is there before Jesus. Jesus heals him instantly. And then they're on in the triumphal entry into Jerusalem. So what's going on in these few chapters in here? Well, I think if we look at it, kind of the big picture, we see a lot of eyes that have been opened, but not opened all the way, that there still is some spiritual blindness here. In fact, some corrupting influences from either the Pharisees, the religious elites, and their twisting of the scripture and their preoccupation with religious standing, or the Herodians and their preoccupation with power and their uncomfortableness with being challenged in their sin. Because what has happened in these chapters? Back and forth, back and forth. Jesus is saying all the time, I'm going to Jerusalem. I'm the Messiah. I'm going to die. I'm going to be raised. There's all this between the lines you can read about. When you look back, we can read about with hindsight because we have, thankfully, the whole New Testament. But we see Jesus is going to accomplish his great mission, which is the redemption of sin. The focus is on sin, the spiritual kingdom Jesus is going to be creating, justifying us in God's eyes. And what are the people who are there with Jesus preoccupied with the whole time? These things from the Pharisees and the Herodians, right? From the Pharisees. Well, what does the law really say about divorce? What about those people in that other group over there who aren't joining us and they're doing, you know, God's work? What should we do about them? What does this mean about Elijah? I don't understand. You know, this kind of this confusion about spiritual things and maybe even some bickering about spiritual things. Or the influence of the Herodians. Who's the greatest in the group? Who's the most powerful? Jesus, can we be your right-hand man? Can we be on your right and left? Can we be in charge of this? Jesus, you know, what? Let's focus on these things where he's saying, no, focus on the sin in your life. Get that out. If you want to be great, you need to be a servant of other people. Do you see how through this whole section it's evident that the disciples' eyes are not as open as they need to be, up to the point where they're saying, get those kids out of here, right? Let Jesus worry about the important things. He's saying, no, children are the kind of people that I want to come listen to me, right? They are not in sync with Christ. And that's not a judgment of them. I'm not saying that I would be any better, but they clearly, their eyes are not opened as wide as Jesus would want them to be. They saw Jesus, they saw the new kingdom, but frankly, at that point, they saw Jesus' kingdom like the blind man saw things as trees. And their eyes were not fully opened clearly to see the new kingdom for what it should be and Jesus for who he truly was. And I think it's Jesus perhaps healed the blind man in the way he did so they could look back and say, aha, now I see, just as like Jesus told them in the boat, you know, having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? Are your eyes truly open to see what I'm doing in front of you? Or are you worried about things like bread? So the challenge for us this morning is the same. Has our vision as Christians been corrupted? Jesus is working through us. He will provide for us. But have we corrupted what he has provided with the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod? And the challenging question to myself is, do I see myself in Mark chapters 8 through 10? So, and I mean, kind of a list here of the things that the characteristics we could see in the disciples as they're kind of infected with the ideas from the Pharisees and the Herodians. Do I see this infection in myself? Do I find myself standing in Jesus' way? Do I miss the big picture of the Bible? Am I failing to defeat evil? Am I arguing over who's the best? Am I falling into petty religious squabbles? Am I not taking sin seriously? Am I looking to justify myself? Am I thinking that some people are more important than others? Am I clinging to my worldly goods? Am I wanting to be preeminent? All of these things were the things that Jesus was confronting in Mark chapters 8 through 10. And they're the things that we have to confront in our lives if we truly want to have eyes open that are seeing the kingdom for what Jesus intends it to be. And I think if we look at contemporary Christianity, and I use that term in the most broad sense, right? But in contemporary Christianity in the United States or even Western Europe. We see folks who purport to have eyes open, but who are obsessed with either religious elitism, the Pharisees, or political power, the Herodians. And perhaps that explains why so many people walk around spiritually half blind, because they haven't opened their eyes to the truth that Jesus wants us to see. So the solution is here at the end of Mark chapter 10, and that is to act like the second blind man, Bartimaeus. Mark chapter 10, verse 46. They came to Jericho, and as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a great crowd, Bartimaeus, a blind beggar, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." And many rebuked him, telling him to be silent. But he cried out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up, he's calling you." And throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. And Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And the blind man said to him, "Rabbi, let me recover my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Go your way, your faith has made you well." And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him on the way. Unlike the first blind man, this blind man's sight was restored immediately. And what did he do? He simply went up to Jesus. Jesus said, "What do you want?" And he said, "Jesus, I want to be able to see." And he was able to see. So this morning, let's all challenge ourselves to have that attitude of going to Jesus and asking him to let us see, to approach his word in that way of humility, of saying, "Jesus, we want to see what is your truth." Not truth that's perverted or infected by the influences of the world. Not truth that would cause us, after something as miraculous as the feeding of the 5,000, to then look around and say, "Guys, we forgot the bread. We forgot the bread," right? To not to focus on those things, but to focus on what Jesus was trying to get us to focus on. His atoning work, his death and resurrection, the seriousness of sin, the big picture of salvation. If you're here this morning and you feel that your eyes have been dimmed over time by the corrupting influences of the world around us, please join us all this morning in rededicating ourselves to opening our eyes by looking at God's word afresh. If you're here this morning and you've never been healed, but you realize that you are spiritually blind, you're stumbling through your life, not able to see, now is a great time to do what Bartimaeus did, realizing your condition, just simply crying out to God and saying, "Open my eyes, God, so that I can see." And if you do that, we know that God will allow you spiritually to have that sight, to see how you need to be living so you can be pleasing to him, and that you can have that eternal relationship with him that he wants you to have. If we can help you with anything in any way this morning, please let us know while we sing this song.